Pietrasek is an entrepreneur and investor. He is the co-owner of Cinerise. He is the co-founder of Carpathian Partners, and he is the author of Homo Idiocus, Why We Are Stupid and What to Do About It. Welcome to the show, Cesare.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Greg.
Excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, some more about your work, and what motivated you to write the book.
It's a lot of questions. So starting with the last one, what motivated me to write a book is just looking around the world. I don't know about you, but I have this perception that I'm surrounded by stupidity all the time, everywhere. No? Like, think about this. Like, the things we go to the store in the US and we cannot buy a drink, a bottle of wine without a passport or ID, right? You go on a high-speed train in Spain and they are asking you for the Wi-Fi password to protect you from the people who could steal it when the train is moving at high speed, right? Like things like that. 10% of people in the US believes that the world is flat. 40% of people do not believe in theory of evolution. You know, it's just everywhere. There's stupidity everywhere, right? In small things, in big things, in the government, in law, in everyday life. So that's why I wanted to tell the story. I wanted to share this observation with the world, classify the whole problem, dig into this, explain it in a kind of scientific but accessible way, and see if it resonates with people. See if we can create a movement of fight against stupidity. Whether we can fight the stupidity in the small things every day and make people aware that this problem exists and fight back. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is probably because of my work as well, is that I have privilege or time to think about how we behave as humans. And, you know, I'm one of the co-owners of the company, which is number one company in the world in predicting human behavior. And it's surprising how easy it is to predict our behavior, how deterministic and, you know, behavioral our behavior is. I would love to think there's more magic in our behavior, which there is, but the extent to which we are predictable is surprising. So I just wrote this book as a way of therapy, I guess, telling everyone, just let's stay human. Let's not take away the last bits of things which makes us different from machines. Let's just not become robotic. You know, let's stay human. Let's not take the last bits of our difference between the machines and us. There's still a number of things where we are better than machines, and we should try to keep it this way.
Well, amen. Isn't sort of the stupid stuff we do what makes us human?
Surprisingly, in some occasions, yes. Normally, no. And I'm just a big warrior against stupidity. But actually, there is a chapter in the book which I call Beautifully Stupid, which actually shows that a certain amount of stupidity makes us incredible, makes us the most beautiful of what we are. Think about the people who risk their lives to send others. Think about our reluctance to kill each other. You know, I bring facts from history, such as the excavations at Gettysburg, where 50% of the excavated muskets were loaded twice, which means that somebody was pretending that they were shooting, right? So people, even in battle, don't want to kill each other, right? We have this beehive mentality in a lot of situations where we prioritize the well-being of others versus us. You know, it's, from our individualistic point of view, it's stupid, but yet so, so beautiful.
That is fascinating about the muskets. I'd never heard that. That is really interesting. In your day job of predicting human behavior, you talk about how it's pretty easy. Why is that? Is that because of our self-interest? So I can say, well, based on what I know about George, he's probably going to make this determination because it's in his best interest.
Pretty much so. So basically, a lot of your past behavior can explain your future behavior, right? And this is, so-called Skinnerian, the philosophy of determining behavior, which I don't fully subscribe to, but sadly, it's to reflect to commemorate the author of this theory, Mr. Skinner. But it is indeed truly remarkable how the past behavior determines the future behavior. So my call for action is, let's not allow our quick thinking, which is related to a lot of biases and heuristics, which is essentially saving our brain capacity and accelerating our decision making, to play the major part of our life. Yes, we need this quick, fast heuristics, those simplifications, sadly translating into biases in our life, because otherwise it would be too much brain power that we would need in making every decision. But you know what? Let's know that in number of decisions, we need to actually use the prefrontal cortex rather than amygdala, which drives a lot of other those small decisions which contribute to the biases.
So our FAST system is that initial knee-jerk response to things. And what I'm hearing you say is we're leaning a little too heavy on that system and not using our logical brain.
Absolutely. But that is not the only mechanism of stupidity. There's so many others, right? It's from how we are built. Forget this fast and slow thinking. Think about the things such as two of us share, such as testosterone. We have far more testosterone than many other, humans on this planet who are, for example, women, right? And that contributes tremendous amount to our stupidity, right? There's so much more stupidity exhibited by men rather than women because of the aggression that we have. There's other biological factors which determine this as well, such as pollution, for example. There is this phenomenal graph that I came across researching this book, which shows the correlation of lead pollution and aggression. And it's such a strong correlation that's so powerful. And we had lead in our gasoline until 1990s, and in our paints until 1978, right? Tons of other, just normal air pollution showed in the Israeli and Chinese studies to reduce intellectual performance on tests by up to 5%, right? So tons of just looking into biology, there's tons of reasons why we are stupid. Then, even not going into societal level, psychological level or institutional level, which are two, three different additional levels of stupidity.
So many levels of stupidity that we human beings have been able to identify and utilize and stack up. Is there hope for us?
Absolutely. And hopefully the book will be a rally against around this cause. Because those mechanisms are known. The mechanisms of stupidity, right? We just glance through some biological things. There's many others related to how we function as a society. There's many others how we function as a human being from a psychological point of view, and then how institutions work. So if we understand how those mechanisms work, then we can fight them and we can see them. We can see, like, oh, this is a manipulation technique, right? Like, for example, picking up on a small minority of people for something and picking up a fight is a classical sign of manipulation, right? Another thing is cult of personality, right? Classical tools of manipulation, right? Groupthink, right? What you do in group versus what you do in as a person is completely different. If you learn those mechanisms and you say, like, okay, I see that I'm getting a little bit, too taken by the group behavior, I think I should step back. Maybe we should not throw things at each other at the football game, right? Which is, in 2012, 70 people were killed in the riots between two football clubs in Egypt over just which team is better, right? So if you know those mechanisms, there is hope. There is this magical time between the action and reaction where you can make a difference between doing something stupid or not.
That magical window of time, but that 80% or whatever it was that you mentioned, 80 to 86% of young people can't differentiate between fact and opinion. Is that evidence that they're falling victim to just, or what is, how is that possible?
Look, it's connected with media diet. It's connected how short attention span of the children is these days, and it's connected with the pure fact of being bombarded by short messages. So research shows that just the fact of responding to various things and not focusing on one thing at a time reduces IQ around 10 points, 10 to 13 points. Then there is the whole exposure to 30-second spots and not being able to focus on anything. It's how we grow our children that contributes to the epidemic of not being able to discern fact from fiction, or opinion rather, fact from opinion.
As you were going through and looking at this, is it like a perfect confluence of events through environmental pollution, through social media pollution, the way that we're consuming shorts or reels or whatever it might be, and just so many wonderful things happening, and whatever forces are conspiring against us to manipulate us, to get us to throw rocks at each other in large groups or to pick fights with each other, is it sort of amazing when you look at it and it's all working, or how are you thinking about it?
I don't think it's like a centrally, controlled thing. It's basically a random result of how we are building our civilization, right? We build our civilization to optimize and, advance with what we have, right? This means that we got ahead of our bodies and our brains. Our bodies and our brains are still in the paleolithic kind of, hunter-gatherer mode. That's why it's so easy to hijack our attention, because we are prone to, our brain by nature prioritizes the dangerous, the loud, the colorful, the moving, everything which is flashy, that you see in social media, that you see in TikTok, that you see in advertising, even in weather kind of forecasting, is the mechanism of manipulation, right? Which is exactly what, sadly, what made us alive today. Because those things, the prioritization to the loud, the dangerous, the moving, etc., saved us from the lion, from a colorful reptile, from a big breakdown of weather and storm and everything, right? So that's so funny that the thing that made us alive today is contributing at this very moment to our decline.
How very human of us. How very human. What got us here will not get us to the next stage.
That's right. And there is huge amount of great examples in terms of philosophies even that support this point. Think about the humanism or liberalism, the central concept that probably is a winning concept today, or was until today, where the well-being of the human is the center point. And so that helped us to remove slavery, that helped us to remove give voting rights to women, et cetera, accept homosexuality, et cetera. But you know what? The same concept in the future might actually lead to our decline. Because, for example, if the same concept leads to us extending the same principle in an unlimited way to, for example, animals, which seems to be a good thing, such as we should not harm animals, everybody agrees. But if we take it to the extreme, such as we will not do any testing on animals, that means that with the next epidemic, you know what? We will pay the price. The people will be the guinea pigs, and millions more will die because, there will be no testing on animals, right? So this is just one example of how taking the noble concept and not changing it and not verifying along the way can actually end up in a in a bad outcome.
That's really interesting that our compassion and our love has done really extraordinary things. But maybe now we need to slow that down a little bit.
Yep, totally. That we need to be so vigilant that the old good-fashioned things that worked for us in the past might not be used to hijack our future. Another funny example that I provide in the book is that, the concept of transparency, noble thing, isn't it? Right? Like everybody would like the world to be transparent. And but you know what? The Swedes are taking it to the extreme. Do you know that Swedes require the publishing of their tax receipt on the government website? So imagine that you are a man who is trying to invite a woman to a date. And before she accepts your date, she's just literally checking like how much money you made last year, right? So is this, the right way of describing a value in Swedish krona? I don't know. Maybe you're a poet, or maybe you're working on something very big, or maybe, you know what, you're just, it just doesn't matter that your value should be described in the Swedish krona.
That's really interesting. How long has that been a thing? Is it been a
I
long time?
think
Is that a new
for another,
development?
yeah, I think for like I'm 45, so my friends in there, I think from late 20s were complaining about this, so it's been, I think, for a while.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah.
How interesting. So, too much of a good thing is, in fact, a good thing.
Might not be a good thing. Too much of a good thing might not be a good thing.
So I am a solution. Well, I don't know that I can say that. I like to try to figure things out. I like to think that I examine the biases that I have. I like to think that I am critical of myself and try and make better decisions and learn and improve. Do you think that most people are like that?
No, I think that you are far above. I think that people do not reflect much on their behavior for various reasons, right? First of all, there's a cognitive thing. I read some research that it was some high teens of percentage of people cannot go through the mental exercise of saying, of understanding the concept of, if you were this guy, what would you do? They just cannot understand it, but I'm not this guy, right? So like a big percentage of society cannot understand this concept, right? And then think about even the rest of society who understands this concept doesn't have the time very often to reflect because life is very demanding for a lot of people. Imagine that you are, a mother of three and you're single, or maybe, you have a husband that is also, contributing to the household, but it's not enough. Like the stress of every day makes, first of all, it's proven that it reduces your intelligence, the financial stress, right? You're basically you're it's a bandwidth effect. Basically, it just takes away your part of your brain to worry about financials. And then on top of it, you just might be so busy with all things of life, you don't have time for the self-reflection that you are exhibiting.
So in a lot of ways, people are redlining. We are just going at our full capacity, and I don't have the privilege capacity to entertain the idea of walking in somebody else's shoes or being empathetic because I've got bills to pay.
Yes, you merged the two concepts, but in summary, yes. So that this particular exercise was done at a study when they told people that they, before they were doing an IQ test, that their car has been hit in the parking garage and it is roughly $3,000 repair. And those people, their IQ test were about 10, 15 points lower. And then if you told them exactly the same thing, but you said the cost of repair was, if I remember correctly, $300, the tests were pretty okay.
That's okay.
So can you believe that? That this is just the cognitive load of worrying is reducing your intellectual potential. Same thing goes with food, right? That's what we didn't talk about. Too little food or too much food, or particularly bad food, also reduces our intellectual potential from a 20% reduction for the children who were fed fast food only. It was, I think, eighth graders in the US, to 15 IQ points of malnutritioned children from Mauritius, which didn't have enough food at very young age 3 or something. So it's the two sides of the same coin of basically insufficient or bad quality food.
That's fascinating. I could certainly think of times in my life that you get bad news and you can't think of anything else. So I totally get that. This is all fascinating. We could talk for hours, but we only have 25 minutes. So thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more? How can they interact with you? Where can they get their copy of Homo
Yes. Idioticus.
Idiocus?
Idioticus. Yes.
Idioticus.
Yeah.
Idioticus. Six
Yeah.
times the charm.
Perfect.
Hey, there you go,
Perfect.
buddy.
So, yeah, I would love people to spread the story. You can pick it up on Amazon or some good bookstores. It's when you type Homo Idioticus in Amazon, there's only one book of this type. So you can listen to it. You can read it in a traditional format. Would love you to share your views, write to me. You can come to my website at cesarepietrasic.com, or try to fight it. Just let's be the la resistance of fight against stupidity.
I love it. Got to join the movement, for goodness sakes, before it's too
Yes.
late. I'm so sorry. Beautiful. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Cesare your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Pick up your copy of Homo Idioticus on
Perfect.
Amazon. And then go to CesarePietrasik.com. It's CezaryPietrasik. .com and check out all things Cesare. Is there going to be a follow-up? I imagine this was a fun project to work on.
Oh, yes, it was. And all the people are coming to me. Hey, we need to write about this. We need Homo Idioticus too. Write, please, about this and that.
Yeah. I don't doubt that for a
The
second.
material is infinite. That's a good
Yes.
thing.
We are always creating new stupid stuff. So perfect. Well, thank you again, Cesare.
It was such a pleasure.
Till next time, remember, do your
Thank
part
you.
by doing your best.